Maccie's McSharry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.
Okay, now it is time for us to talk about the news. Aoife Moore from the Irish Examiner is here, political correspondent. Good morning.
Good morning.
Aoife, I saw on your Instagram this morning that someone was slagging you off for your language.
Yeah, I'm trashy and classless, Louise. Well, I mean, if we it's true now. Someone wrote it on Twitter.
Can I ask, because you are a political correspondent, but you're a young woman as well, mm-hmm. and do you feel like people look at you differently because of, say, your clothes, or you don't dress in any kind of unusual way?
Yeah, I get a lot of it, especially when I'm on the radio. I get a lot of grief about how I talk and my accent. I've been told to go back to Northern Ireland a couple of times.
What?
Yeah, like, if you have a problem with the government, why don't you go back to Northern Ireland? Like, lads, I'm Irish. Hate to break it to you.
You're going to need to sit down for this, guys. Yeah. I'm actually Irish. Wow. Yeah. When I read it, I was like, yeah, I bet you get a lot of grief.
Yeah.
Well, I love your accent.
I mean, people are used to political correspondents looking and acting and sounding a certain way. So men in people suits. Don't like change. Yeah.
Well, you keep doing that change. Okay, we've got so much to talk about. I shouldn't be chatting to you about anything else other than the news, because it's been a wild week for COVID news.
It's been wild. It's not good. We had a NPHET briefing on Tuesday or Wednesday, and it was the first one we'd had this week in a while. And even listening to Dr. Ronan Glenn and Philip Nolan, like, they were saying basically, you know, they are as concerned as they were in April. The instances of COVID, the spikes around Dublin, were getting away from us. And as we know now, we're back in lockdown. But I don't think they felt like they had any other choice, because so much of the transmission is in the community and a lot of people don't know where they're getting it. Mm-hmm. And that's what really concerns them. It's different when it's in, you know, a workplace or a nursing home. They can kind of see where it came from, but when it comes from the community, that's when they start getting concerned, because people don't even know where they're getting COVID again. So I think that's what the lockdown was kind of linked to.
I feel like there's a bit of a vibe that people are fed up and compliance is proving more and more difficult for people.
Yeah, I think, like, everyone can kind of relate to the fact that we are not acting the way we were acting in March. You know,
no.
I thought I had COVID every other day back in March, and, you know, you're so strict and you're washing your hands and, you know, all this. Mm-hmm. And everyone kind of let their guard down a bit, and we've now seen what happens when you let your guard down. So I think we need to go back, and that's what the health experts are saying, we need to go back to the way we were acting in March, because the virus hasn't gone away.
Yeah, we need to remember, and it really is very simple. It's washing your hands on a regular basis, it's getting your hand sanitizer out, it is wearing your mask. And there has been, I think, like, a significant improvement in terms of mask wearing. Like, certainly, you know, I rarely see people without masks now in public places inside, and I get very annoyed when I see people not wearing them. Even though I know that there are some people who, you know, have certain conditions or whatever, which mean that they're not required to wear them. Sometimes I see people and I'm like,
Yeah, I know. And it's really difficult. Like, my boyfriend is hard of hearing and he has a real issue. He's also Scottish, so Irish people are basically talking gibberish to him. And he's also hard of hearing. So the mask thing's an issue, but, like, we have to do it. It's just one of those things. I hate it. So, like, everyone's getting spots on their chin and stuff. But like, we have to do it because COVID's not going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. And the good thing is it's lockdown, but it's not lockdown. Like, you know, we're not being told not to leave our houses in Dublin.
Yeah.
And of course, the rest of the country has their own set of guidelines, which I think is appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
But I would just say, as a word of warning, just keep being good, because otherwise you'll end up where we are.
Yeah, everyone's, like, I'm sure, like, most people in the capital are really annoyed that we're back here, but we also need to kind of all work together to ensure that it doesn't go further. So, like, yeah, we can still go to the gym, which is good. There's no classes, but the gyms are open. You know, weddings have an exemption this weekend, but religious ceremonies, weddings, funerals are back down to 25. And, you know, shops are open. The restaurants are closed, which I know is a massive blow, you know, to the pubs and restaurants that have been, they've only been open 3 weeks.
Yeah,
I think it seems so long. But again, we know that COVID just ruins everyone's perception of time. But yeah, so the restaurants have basically had to close from midnight last night unless they have outdoor seating, which, as we know, you know, you might be okay in Dublin city centre, but further out, you know, a lot of restaurants and pubs have had to close.
Mm. And also, you can only have 15 people outside. So even if you have seating for 30 or 40, you can only have 15, which obviously financially might not make sense. So I would say, you know, while we're allowed to, if you do have a restaurant near you, which does have outdoor seating and you feel safe to go there, you know, we really need to support restaurants, get the takeaway, you know, whatever is safe and it, we are allowed to do at the moment, we need to do to try and support them so that they're there when things reopen. Yeah, so look, that's where we are. 3 weeks at least. Fingers crossed we can all... I mean, it really is up to us whether it's longer than 3 weeks. So we just need to do it. It's not nice. We are fed up. That is the truth. I'm fed up. You're fed up. We're all fed up. But if we want to get to the end of this or like the next phase of this, we have to get it together and do the right thing. Okay, we need to talk as well about the impact of COVID on the events sector because that, I mean, it has just been...
Totally decimated. Yeah. So the live events and entertainment sector have basically, they've published an open letter. There's more than 600 people have signed it, basically saying, you need to pay us some attention. Like, they feel ignored by the government. There's no special dispensation for musicians or the live event sector, because we were talking about this yesterday, and it's not just the musicians. There are sound engineers, the people who deal with the stages, managers, like recording studios, all this sort of stuff. All these people are completely, you know, basically like lost at the minute. So they've written a letter, you know, to the minister, who has taken it on board, and we talked about this last week. She is a former busker, so she keeps saying, you know, that she is really, really aware of the live event sector, but they're basically asking for like different kinds of funding for them, because the COVID unemployment payment is basically what everyone gets, and they're saying like, yeah, that's great, but also we're probably the last sector to come back, and we probably need something else.
Yeah, because there's that's just what they're saying, like the first to close and the last to open.
Yeah, because like, when do you think you'll ever be at a festival again?
I don't want to say it, but it's not anytime soon.
I'm sorry I brought that up, everyone.
I really feel for these people, and I saw Niler Nine, who would be, I suppose, one of the biggest voices in music in Ireland, was tweeting yesterday that this new movement in Dublin means that the only gig that he had in the next number of months has been cancelled, because he was due to DJ in Hang Dye, a restaurant in Dublin. And he said, you know, it's fine, I get it, but it's tough on the old mental health.
Yeah, this is the other thing. Like, your work is so linked to your mental health, and we saw that in the last recession. And it's, I was actually talking to my taxi man on the way over, and he was saying, you know, it's a massive issue with taxi men as well, especially if some of them are older and they don't feel safe working. So yeah, I think there's going to have to be a lot of funding put into mental health in the next year or so.
Now, moving on, we were just saying we can't believe that this was this week, but we talked last week, or we read last week, about the absolutely horrendous harassment Evie Nahulavan went through, and it has prompted lots of people to share their own experiences. You spoke to TDs, female TDs, about their experiences of sexual harassment in the Dáil, and you also shared your own experience at the start of this week.
Yeah, after reading Avian's story, like, I know myself that sexual harassment is rife in workplaces, and my workplace is Leinster House, so I thought, right, I'll just survey the female TDs. There's 34 of them. I got 25 responses. 12 of them have been sexually harassed, and a lot of them called me after they filled the survey to talk about their experience. And the main issue is that a lot of them don't want to publicly talk about it. They don't want to come forward. And as one TD said, if you talk about it, then you're a victim and people use it against you. We don't, and we all know that female TDs get a pretty rough time of it generally, and none of them want to say, also, this happened to me. So my kind of issue with it was, if these brave and confident women who not only run in elections but won elections don't feel safe to come forward, what chance do the rest of us have? And I know I shared my own story of when I was sexually harassed, but I wasn't sexually harassed when I lived in Ireland, and I don't think I would have come forward if I had been sexually harassed in Ireland. So I think there's a major issue.
Why?
I just wouldn't have been comfortable. The media is a small place, and I just feel like, again, it would be used against me, like, oh, she's lying, or she's taking it too seriously, or it was only a joke. All the things that you would expect to be said to you. And as we know, like, the media in Ireland's a tiny place, so I feel like if I had been sexually harassed here, I probably wouldn't have said anything.
God, it's just awful, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty horrendous. But
when I read your piece and the fact that so many female TDs had experienced sexual harassment, but that they couldn't, that point that they made, that they would just be a victim and, you know, it would be used against them, I just felt so angry and just sad for them. But also, I totally got it.
Yeah.
Like, I understand completely.
Yeah,
like, why would you give them ammunition?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's, yeah.
And, it's probably, it's well known, but, like, there's a lot of female TDs who have gone to the guards about, like, serious threats. And they're also not talking about that either, because people will say they're making it up or they're looking for attention. And, yeah, I just think we need to have a long conversation about how we treat people in the public eye.
Absolutely. How appalling that you just have to accept that as part of your job. It's absolutely disgraceful. And before I let you go, we of course have to talk about Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who passed away. We woke up to the news this morning that she had died. It's very sad.
Yeah, it's 2020. It's like the worst news you could wake up to. Yeah, so Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg died yesterday. She's had a few bouts with cancer. I think she was 84 or 85. This tiny wee woman. If anyone hasn't watched the Netflix documentary, I would highly recommend it. But yeah, there had been concerns about her health for a long time. There was a lot of chat that she should have retired when Obama was president so that the Democrats could fill her space.
Mm.
Now there's a space on the Supreme Court. There is considerable fear that Trump will try and fill the space in the 50 days he has left as president.
Mm.
But it takes a really long time to basically get a Supreme Court judge onto the Supreme Court. There's a lot of, you know, inquiries, and the FBI have to be involved in all this. So they probably won't get anyone in until around Christmas time, by the looks of it. But it was just, yeah, it's really, really sad. And if anyone doesn't know who Ruth Bader Ginsburg is, she was the lawyer who basically argued that you can't discriminate for someone on the basis of sex, which is, you know, the ultimate gender equality law. So yeah, a massive loss, I think.
Yeah,
everyone.
She was 87. So it will be very interesting to see the fallout there, because I saw, obviously, the Republicans, basically, when Obama was on his way out, the Republicans pitched a fit and said that he didn't get to name another Supreme Court judge.
Yeah.
So now that's being turned against them. But we all know that there's no consistency when it comes to ethics and morals with this particular
really
president.
Isn't. So there is a chance that Trump could get someone in, but we'll just have to hope that he doesn't.
Well, thank you so much, Aoife Moore, political correspondent with the Irish Examiner. I so appreciate your help.
Louise McSherry on 2FM.
With Cadbury Brunch. When you need a proper break, brunch.